This is Paul Masetta. I want to welcome everyone onto the call tonight. And tonight we're going to talk about something really, really interesting and something that has often become a popular subject in the world of influence and persuasion, at least for people that I've been dealing with for many years. Especially, you know, I remember when I was in sales and I was training salespeople, there's various parts to a sales presentation. And the part that people would always freak out about is handling objections. They would always get nervous. It's kind of like the elephant in the room that no one really wants to talk about. I actually always look forward to objections because I know that once I overcome the objections, that's really where the sale is made. If there was no such thing as objections, there wouldn't be salespeople. We wouldn't have jobs as salespeople. Everyone would just willingly comply and buy what we have to offer, and we would be order takers rather than salespeople. So I realized that a lot of the value in what I brought to the table as a salesperson was my ability to overcome objections. And I also knew that because there was such a big group of people out there that were afraid to answer or afraid to overcome objections, that I would be able to set myself apart from that group of people if I really became good at it. So tonight, on tonight's call, I want to talk to you about stealth objection handling. And it's some really powerful information that I'm going to share with you. And I'm going to start off by talking about questioning. Questions, as you probably know, are one of the most important tools that you can use in the influence process, period. And, you know, as masters of influence, we know how important questions are for the purpose of persuading someone to agree with us or believe what we have to say. But the question is, does this mean that all questions can help you draw compliance from others? And the answer is no. Not all questions are helpful. All lines of questioning that come from the influencer have to be goal-oriented. You have to have a goal attached to every single question that you asked, or that you're going to ask someone when you engage your subject. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting your time, or even worse, you're going to be wasting their time, and that's going to do you no good in gaining compliance from them. Another reason why it's important to line your question strategically is that most people have a tendency to push back when they receive information. They push back because they don't like being told what to do. People don't like to feel as if they're being controlled. So how do you work around this? Since people don't like being directed or being told what to do or being controlled, you have to question them in such a way that they actually tell you what you want to hear. So here's an example. Let's say I was trying to sell you an expensive water filtering system, and the system is high-end and it's going to cost over $3,000 to make your establishment completely covered by the system. So how would I convince you to give me the $3,000? Well, I would start by using the right kind of questions. I would ask questions like, what kind of water do you want to flow into your establishment's pipes and taps? Do you want rust and other undesirable components to continue to flow into your water system? How much do you think you can spend on healthy water? Now, these are just basic examples of strategic questions used by influencers during a dialogue. So what I want you to do is take out a piece of paper and a pen, or if you're on your computer, open up a word processing document and start to think and write down or type out some of your own questions that you can apply toward what you're offering and how you can position those questions in a way that your subject really begins to understand the value or the benefits of what you have to offer. Now, if you're a little tricked up at this point because you're not sure, then obviously we need to talk about how well you know your the benefits of your offer. So when you approach someone with the intent to sell them something, like an idea or a product, you're going to have biases. You know, you're going to believe that, at least I hope you do anyway, that your offer is better than everyone else's. Now, if what you have to offer is truly amazing, you're not going to have problems selling it to people by stating its benefits. But here is the problem. Most influencers are aware of the fact that they need to pitch features and benefits but most of them don't know how to do it. I can't tell you all there is to know about the craft of pitching benefits, because even seasoned copywriters will tell you that they never stop learning about this essential step in the influence process. But what I can tell you is that there are many ways to express the idea of getting a clear benefit. You only have to be really creative about your pitch to make these benefits shine. So here are some examples of benefits. They need your idea, service, product right now because it's going to solve one of their biggest problems. And not acting now is going to bring about clear losses. What you're offering is a direct solution to an issue that's been bothering your subject for a long time. The subject needs to accept your offer because of your long-standing history of excellence. The subject should deal with you or your business because you offer the best possible experience in your field or industry, as proven by testimonials from past customers. The best time to accept your offer is now because you're going to be offering incentives and rewards to early birds. That translates to more benefits, more ease, and just an overall value experience. And you're always fair in dealing with people, and you've made this one of the core principles in life. So think about those six things that I just mentioned to you, and now think about how what you have to offer, whether it's a product, service, idea, or opinion, and how you can position what you have to offer using each one of those things that I just mentioned. Now you'll begin to have a better grasp on how to position your benefits and how to position what you have to offer, because that's very important in the process of overcoming objections. Now, you have to realize this about objections. Objection is very, very common in the world of influence. It's natural. It's part of the process. It's actually the twin brother of agreement. There really is no way to have one without the other. Now, this doesn't mean that you should, you know, resign yourself to the losses and defeats. You just have to know how to entice agreement instead of objection. And the easiest way to handle objections is by avoiding them in the first place. People hold their core beliefs, values, and principles very close to them, and they protect them because these ideas represent stability in their life. When you attempt to change them on the spot, you're going to cause the subject to become overly defensive. So to avoid the situation where you have to engage in verbal fencing with a defensive subject, my suggestion is that you find as many values and beliefs to reaffirm before you make your offer. Because as you agree with another person's beliefs, values, and principles, he begins to lower his defenses until he no longer feels threatened by you or your ideas. Now, a person is going to slam the door in the face of a stranger who's offering the fountain of youth, but a person would never say no to a best friend who's cooked up a crazy idea. Do you see the difference in how people are receptive to the ideas of other people based on their relationship with those people? So I want you to make it your goal to become your subject's best friend during your conversation or your interaction with them. I want you to make them to feel as comfortable as possible and as trusting as possible so you can avoid objections. Now, of course, there's still going to be objections, but as a person becomes more and more trusting, he's going to find fewer and fewer reasons to object to what you're laying on the table. So you want to avoid debates that directly counter the subject's long-standing beliefs. And even if you win, your subject is never going to forgive you for debunking his belief. It's better to harmonize with the subject as much as possible, because arguments only create friction and distance between you and the subject. Now, if there is a time where you do have to change someone's belief, what you want to do is you want to give them what I call the backdoor passageway to reaffirming a belief by supplying them with a piece of information that perhaps they didn't know, and then allowing them to use that newfound piece of information as an excuse to change their value or belief. You see, people don't like to change their values or beliefs, and eventually there's going to come a point, there comes a point in all of our lives where we realize something that does force us to change them. but it's human nature to want to just hold on to them even if we know that they're wrong. So if your subject does this, and most likely he will, the key is to now give him a pass, to give him a new piece of information that he can use to justify his reason for changing his belief, if and when you find yourself in that situation. One of the key tactics that I use is I take advantage of peak experiences and end experiences. So let me explain what that means. Humans have a funny way of processing and remembering events. If a person enjoyed something, even if it were for just 10 minutes, he would remember that for as long as he lives. But if he were enjoying something and that enjoyment was interrupted for even a short period of time, he would remember the end experience, which is negative, and forget about the previous pleasure or enjoyment that he had experienced prior to the negative end experience. So follow what I'm saying here. Now, this is by no means an obstacle to influence, but rather it's a window of opportunity. You see, if someone says no to your offer, backtrack just a little bit so you can ask questions that will later erode the resistance of the subject. So if your offer was rejected at first, I want you to ask the subject about his last experience with your competitor. A competitor is any person or business, if you're a business person, that was previously associated with the subject, and slowly draw out their negative experience and what happened after they had that negative experience. At this point, the subject is going to remember only the negatives more than the positives, because that's simply how the human mind is wired. So after you draw out the negative experiences from your competitor, slowly lead the subject to what you have to offer and show them that they're not going to have these negative experiences when they deal with you. Just make sure that you can back up your claims with action. Otherwise, the subject is most likely going to leave you again after having a bad experience. So you can use this tactic to transform a no mindset into a yes mindset. It might take some time to take effect, but eventually it's going to work, and it can be used in all different types of situations. The beauty of this is that, you know, in the beginning of this call, we're talking more about preventing objections, preventative measures that you can take to avoid objections, and then we're going to move into what you do when you actually come across them. What I just shared with you is something that you can use both in the preventative process and when you're in the actual process of reversing an objection. So make sure you keep note of that one. Another thing that you want to do is you want to debunk negative beliefs. And here's how you do that. When an influencer is operating on full power, he usually views the subject as a direct target. And the influencer is going to do everything in his power to disprove the other person's beliefs about what's being offered at the moment. And the result of an attack like this is going to be utter failure. Because no matter how hard you insinuate that a person is wrong for holding on to certain beliefs, that person is going to ignore you, or worse, fight you. And we all know what that means. It means that you're not going to get the outcome that you desire. Influencers are at a disadvantage because if the subject walks away, then the influencer walks away with nothing but tension and disappointment. So my advice to you, when you're faced with the task of persuading someone who's beginning to show you resistance and is unmoving in his beliefs, you don't tell the other person that they're wrong. Don't tell him that he's been holding ineffective or false beliefs all his whole life. Don't say that you are in the right and he's in the wrong. Instead, harmonize with the other person and ask him to imagine himself performing something for you by accepting another belief. The subject must realize himself what he can gain by accepting your offer. And his beliefs, if they're getting in the way, you have to loosen those deeply embedded beliefs by replacing them with your beliefs and eventually leading him to the target behavior. Your goal is to change someone's belief so that the behavior also changes. Now, you can't change a person's behavior for the long term if the beliefs remain the same. The subject has to experience for himself what would happen if he changed his beliefs. When you do that, you become more of an influencer. You actually will begin instructing and guiding the person as he transforms these deeply rooted beliefs, that which is completely different from just saying that the other person is wrong. So if you do that, that's not going to get you anywhere. But if you harmonize and begin to restructure those beliefs using that backdoor pass that I talked to you about before, by giving them a reason to justify the belief change, you now begin to move them in the right direction. Another thing that you want to do is you want to prevent something called option attachment, and you want to do it as soon as possible. There are three things that you always want to stay away from when you're pitching an idea, a product, or a service: buyer's remorse, anticipated regret, and perhaps the worst out of all three of them, option attachment. Buyer's remorse takes place when the subject regrets having purchased something from you. Anticipated regret is the decision to not buy anything because the buyer feels that he will only regret it later on. And option attachment is the deadliest of all three because it can leave a potential buyer paralyzed with indecision for a very, very long time, which is not good. So what is option attachment? Option attachment takes place when a person is faced with two options that he finds really, really attractive. To the decision maker, choosing one would mean losing the other good option, and so choosing actually equates with pain and loss. If the option attached individual is also going to feel that if he chooses one, the other option would probably look tantalizingly attractive a few days later. So faced with this problem, the option-attached subject will think about the two options to no end, but he won't make a decision. What does that mean for you? Nothing good. Option-attached individuals represent uncertainty and a potential dead end. So how do you remedy this problem? Well, the first thing you have to do is make sure that during the dialogue, the subject doesn't grow fond or attached to any other option that you present in the effort to explore both sides of the coin. So to be safe, showcase an inferior option so that it wouldn't be logical to be found as such an option at all. The decision-making stage should also be as quick as possible. Lead the subject to say yes. Don't wait for him to say yes, because if you allow him to do that, he's going to grow even more attached to options that you presented him with. The second step has something to do with the options involved in your presentation. Don't start with the better option, which is your offer. Start with the poorer option and then transition as fast as you can to the better option. Don't let the subject develop a connection with the option that will ultimately be discarded. Another way that you can minimize objections is a technique that will just help him say yes faster. And it doesn't involve anything verbal or complex persuasion strategies. Really, the only thing that you have to do is lead the person to do something physically during the interaction. When you allow a person to perform an action related to the interaction, you immediately bring down his defenses, and the subject is forced to show body language that approves of the interaction. So here's a simple example. Let's say you're about to be joined in a meeting by a person who is known to disagree with almost anyone he meets. He's just a very resistant person. How do you ensure that this person isn't going to disagree with the points that you'll be raising in the meeting? You can try asking the subject to help rearrange the chairs, or ask him to help you carry stuff to the front of the meeting room. Think of something for the other person to do so that he'll have a claim over the meeting itself. When you do this, you're going to reduce the friction and disagreement, and ultimately it's going to help you persuade and influence that person. There has to be some degree of involvement, especially in situations where you have to sell something urgently to another person or a group of people. If the person becomes involved, he's going to take a partial ownership over the event or situation, and he's going to now feel responsible for producing a positive outcome. Any positive outcome always benefits the influencer or both parties, so remember that. And the best thing about this technique is that it can be done very covertly, ultra stealthily, ultra secretively, and the other person isn't going to know that you're trying to influence them at all. This is a good thing because people have a tendency to think that they're being manipulated, and if that becomes an issue, then they're going to decide to simply walk away and not deal with you. So that's why it's important to be extremely, extremely covert when you do this. Now, we're going to start moving into the actual objection part now. And the fact is that, as I said before, even the most seasoned influencers feel a tiny speck of fear when they hear words like, I don't think this is right for me, or I'm not sure, I need to think about it, or an outright no. And hearing a no can sometimes feel like the end of the world, but in reality, disagreement is a meaningless concept. Okay? We now know enough to confidently say that when a person says no, what he's really saying is no until you show me that you can bring me to point B safely. People want proof and reassurance that they're not going to be harmed when they deal with you. This applies to any situation, not just in business. No is only no way until you can offer proof that you're not a threat and you won't be causing any harm. So when a person says no to you, the best thing to do is really explore all the possibilities to gain the trust of the subject. By exploring possibilities and offering the best option, which of course is your offer, the subject defenses will naturally be lowered because you're showing that you have his best interest in mind. It's also important to remember that people tend to hang on to end experiences and peak experiences, like I mentioned before. People also like to generalize. You have to emphasize that by ignoring your offer, they're going to experience some negative outcomes, and your position as an expert is going to be bolstered by your exploration of all the possible angles and consequences of the problem. Right at that moment, your subject is going to encode and remember only the end experiences that you're stating. Whole trains of thought are going to be summed up in those end experiences. It won't even matter if the subject didn't get all the details of your discussion correctly. What he must remember are the potential negative end experiences that might come due to his inaction. Now, most influencers feel that subjects are in a critical state of mind during interactions, but this is actually not the case. Unless a person makes a conscious effort to always analyze everything around him, in most cases he's working on autopilot. So what that simply means is that he'll really not be using much of his logic center, and most of his decisions, words, and actions are going to be based on simple cross-referencing and mental heuristics or shortcuts. That's why you should always structure your input and questions in such a way that you're able to lead the subject to a logical endpoint that will benefit you and him. You do this because people form opinions and ideas based on available input. People's minds react to current stimuli and really nothing else. So here's another shocking truth about people. What they say and decide on now has no bearing on what they've done in the past and what they'll do in the future. They will simply make the decision based on present circumstances and nothing more. People rarely stop to think about what would happen to them in 5 years after they've made a decision. It just doesn't happen. Also, a person might change his mind later on, but that doesn't change the fact that you can get a favorable decision right now. Here's another strange fact. People can formulate strong opinions about stuff that doesn't even exist, like a hypothetical new law or regulation, which proves that most people are creatures of the moment and they're preoccupied in what they will get now more than anything. And this is the reason why objections have to be handled swiftly and strategically when they begin to surface. So remember, in the first part of the call, we talked about how to avoid objections. Now we're moving into the point where the objection is alive and well and it has to be dealt with. So how do we do this? Well, the first thing that you need to do is be the first to address the objection. So you try to avoid it, but if you sense that it's coming, you want to be the first to address it. If you think that you're going to be able to go through a whole entire presentation without incurring objections encountering objections from your audience, then you're sadly mistaken. It's going to happen. So the key is, while you prepare your presentation, you should take the time to identify what those objections are and where they're going to be presented in the delivery of your message. So one way that you can do this is you can think of, through either previous experience or through feedback from your customers, what are the top, let's say, 5 or 10 general objections that you get. And then as you begin your presentation, you can begin to pinpoint where those objections would normally come up. And then you could deliver in your presentation, you could talk about and say, you know, some of the questions that we receive from people are X, Y, and Z. And then you can covertly overcome those objections by talking about how those objections or how those challenges were remedied in the minds of previous customers. You also want to give yourself objections. You see, during the presentation, the subject is going to secretly be thinking of objections that go against your point of view. If you openly bring them up and address them, you're going to bring his or her guard down. You're going to be able to connect with his or her line of thinking. And then at the same time, you also show that you've done your homework on the topic. So number one, you're connecting with them emotionally because they're thinking to themselves, hey, wow, he's on the same level as me. And secondly, you're only increasing your credibility and expertise by showing that you've done your homework on the topic that you're talking about and you know a lot about it. Now, when we come into the point of actual objection handling, what I want you to remember is that empathy is the king of objection handling. Empathy is defined as the action of understanding, being aware, and being sensitive, as well as vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experiences of another person. When you're empathetic, it means you're consciously putting yourself in the other person's shoes in an effort to understand and communicate with him more effectively. Now, this might not sound like a solution to objections at all, but if you look at the nature of objections, you'll see why this can be powerful. People only say no because you haven't shown them that you can bring them safely to your target destination. The no will stay a no until you're able to show that you will not cause harm or grief in any way. Empathy is a very fast and easy way to project a genuinely caring persona during a social interaction. To be empathetic means you have to know how. You have to know that you have to show that you're interested and that you're an active listener. You're not there to take away anyone's resources, but you're there to add to those resources with your offer. When a person keeps saying no to you, that simply means that the trust and rapport hasn't been achieved. If you're unsure as to how to express your genuine care for the other party, you can ask them questions that will help them relate to what you want to achieve and what kind of solutions they want to see. As they begin to share their thoughts, you have to continue asking questions so you get a fuller picture of what's going on in the other person's mind. Statements like, I feel the same way about that issue, can be used to reinforce the idea that you're there to solve their problems and not add to them. Now, it's important that as I begin to talk about objections and how to overcome them, you have to realize that when I speak about all of these different things, I am assuming that your subject doesn't have a conditional issue. So it's your job to uncover conditional issues. You see, as much as we would like to believe that we could wave the influential wand and make people magically comply with anything we ask, the truth is there are going to be times where that's not possible. From time to time, you're going to come across a person who's dealing with a conditional issue, which is anything that physically inhibits the subject's ability to comply. Some conditional issues include lack of finances, disabilities, lack of resources, bad credit. You could be selling a car worth $100,000 for $20,000. If the subject doesn't have the $20,000 or he can't access it from another resource, it's a dead issue and you shouldn't press it. If you sense that your subject has a conditional issue, simply ask, is there something that I'm missing that I should know about that's causing you to wonder about this offer? If they respond with a concern, empathize, address it, overcome it, and close them. If they respond with a conditional issue, then it's best to end things on a friendly note and move on. You follow up with them at a later, more feasible date. Okay? So once we know that there's a conditional issue is not on the table, you want to now determine the root cause of their objections. Why are they disagreeing? Why are they objecting with you? These are just some of the more common questions that master influencers have to deal with. More than anything, a master influencer has to be aware of the most common reasons why people object to offers and ideas. The first reason is that they generally don't like making decisions. Decision making can be a real headache, and if your subject feels this way, he's not going to make a decision. So the second reason is that old habits die hard. People don't want to change. People don't want to disturb the equilibrium that they've created for themselves. To humans, change brings discomfort, and most humans, especially modern ones, avoid that like the plague. So, and the third reason is closely associated with the second reason, that people don't like giving up what they have now to make way for something new. Again, people like having old things and ideas by their side. They hold on to them because they've had those things for the longest. So they'll hold on to those beliefs and ideas because they believe that those beliefs are a part of them. And the fourth reason is probably the hardest to resolve, is that the other party might have had a bad experience with you or your business in the past. People find it easier to say no to someone who's caused them a degree of harm or misfortune in the past. So if you've offered something in the past that failed, your subject might use this as a reason to say no to you. The fifth reason is that resistance to the idea of being controlled. No one likes being controlled. And if you appear to be a very dominant person, you're going to have to deal with lots of resistance. The sixth and final reason is the perceived threat to the self. If what you're offering sounds a little threatening to the subject's self-image or his resources, he's most likely going to say no to you. So always keep those six reasons in mind when you first begin to hear an objection, and figure out what category you need to place your subject into. And remember that outcomes matter all the time. When you come across a truly reluctant subject, you can't feel even the slightest bit of despair, because even the most reluctant person can be gradually drawn out from their defensive stance and fully influenced. If your influence groundwork is falling apart, you need a more robust system of persuasion. So I want to share with you 8 simple steps that will counter most objections by focusing on the outcome of the transaction between you and the subject. First, identify the problem that your offer can solve. You have to be very specific when you do this, because wary subjects and skeptics tend to ignore generalizations. Be very specific about the issue or problem that you can help solve. 2, after identifying the problem, show the subject what would happen if this problem continues and he doesn't take action to fix it. Showcase the negative outcomes, like the extra costs over time that will result from inaction. Ask the subject what type of resolution or outcome he wants to see after being confronted with the issue or the problem. Ask the subject what would happen if he chooses to solve the problem. Ask the subject again if this new route, the resolution, is really what he wants at the moment. Next, think of the long-term effects of the solution that you're offering to the subject. Is it really going to help the other person, or is it going to only benefit you? Then you need to reevaluate. If you think your solution won't help him in the long term, you have to make this clear to the other subject so he won't have any undue expectations. Next, if the subject gives an answer that doesn't completely align with what you want to hear, don't be quick to judge him. Hear him out and try convincing him again. Next, never insinuate or state that the other person's beliefs are wrong. I mentioned this before, I'll mention it again. You're only going to open up a can of worms each time that you do that. Instead, harmonize instead of creating more friction. Now, if he continues to resist, you need to really start analyzing these objections. By nature, objections can be put into one of three categories: information-seeking objections, sale-related objections, and invalid objections. Invalid objections have to be dealt with swiftly because these are the most rooted in irrational thoughts and ideas. A person who has an invalid objection doesn't really know why he's saying no. So you have to slowly condition the person to listen to what you have to say first. Examples of invalid objections are: do you think this product would have been better if it was produced by company X instead of company Y? Silence can also be a form of objection. If the subject is too quiet throughout the presentation, he may have not been listening at all. You have to build your groundwork once again and establish rapport before trying to sell your idea, product, or service again. Otherwise, the dialogue is going to end in a bad way. Maybe I'll have the funds for it next time we see each other. I'm interested, but I don't think I'm ready for it yet. Information-seeking objections are made because the subject still lacks vital information about the offer, and he doesn't really feel comfortable doing business with you just yet. Some of these examples are: I'm not interested in what you're offering at the moment. I don't think I can spare any extra cash. I'm happy with what I have at the present time. Your competition offered me something better. Sale-related objections are almost always personal requests. Something like, I don't like blue, I prefer red most of the time, the size is too small, I like double-coated paint jobs, whatever. When you hear a sale-related objection, the subject is actually telling you, I'm ready to buy, you just have to give me what I really need. So this is all part of objection analyzation. If there was a magic key that would unlock the power to dissolve objections, I would easily give it to you. But the fact is that there isn't. Most influencers are usually alone in times of crisis. That's why it's important for you to be able to analyze these objections. If you don't have the ability to analyze objections, you're going to end up making a lot of missed shots, and that's never a good thing because you always have limited time to influence someone. So here's a step-by-step guide to analyzing objections. First, you won't be able to understand the subject unless you hear him out first. Don't react to the objection. Listen carefully. If he has to speak for 15 minutes straight, just listen the whole time. If he's mentioning technical requirements and other details like that, write them down. Two, after hearing out the subject, try to classify the problem. Does the problem have to do with you or the offer itself? Does the problem point at flaws in your offer? Don't be afraid to ask questions because you need clear and specific answers from the subject if you're going to validate the objection. After the subject has said his piece, ask again, is there anything else that you want to tell me? This is an effective way of uncovering hidden objections. Objections are better off exposed than hidden because if the objections are hidden, you're not going to be able to address them. Next, harmonize with the subject, even if he's objected to your offer. Acknowledge that he does have a point and that his perspective is logical and serves a purpose. Remind him that you're on his side. At this point, start leading the subject so his frame of mind shifts from that of objection to that of acceptance. Give your answer to his objection. Do this only when you have fully understood why he's objecting. You have to be aware of the nature of his objection as much as you are aware of the details of his objection. It's important that you understand the concept of pain, pleasure, and ease. Masters of influence have to be adept not only in communication, but also with human nature in general. You need to be knowledgeable about the various tendencies and values of people. So, for example, did you know that there are three things that could capture people's attention more than anything? They're pleasure, pain, and ease. Believe it or not, these three things are interrelated because pleasure would be meaningless without the threat of pain, and ease is the only way to go as far as 99% of people are concerned. So if you want to be effective in persuading and influencing people, you have to show them that what you're offering will not only give them a benefit or an advantage, but it will also save them from something extremely painful. If what you're offering your subject provides a simple benefit but doesn't save them from negative consequences, they're not going to be motivated to take action. On the flip side, you have to show them that acquiring the solution to their problem is very easy. Give them everything they would possibly need to decide on the spot. If they have to talk to people, give them the time to talk to these people. That's the ease component. It's easy to get the solution to the problem, and therefore, it would only be logical to acquire the solution from you. Focus on the theme of loss. Always emphasize that they're going to suffer a clear loss if they let go of the opportunity to solve the problem by acquiring the solution that you're offering. Now, if you're still dealing with a person that's holding on to a tight belief, you have to, you know, if you're dealing with someone and it's really just a default response, which is the default response to their disagreement is their uncertainty, you have to learn how to deal with that. And I'm going to show you how. You see, disagreement is equated with stability and avoidance of change. So change can either be good or bad, but humans, as I said before, instinctually associate change with negative consequences. So if you do encounter a really, really staunch objection, you can implement behavioral scripts to modify the cause of the negative behavior, which is just the belief that the person has regarding a particular issue or object. Here's an example of a behavioral script. You open your email in the morning to find that you've made 300 sales in just one day. You also receive a report that your store has been restocked and your website is in fine working condition. You don't have to worry about a thing anymore as you prepare for a fine day with the family. We take care of everything, night and day, 24/7, just for you. When you give a person a script to work with, you're actually giving the other person instructions on how to modify their own behavior. Now, we might not understand the nature of the script, but that's how it works. The best thing about a behavioral script is that people tend to repeat the script even after the meeting. This is influence in action. Your words and your intentions then stay with the subject even if you're not with them anymore. But in order for a behavioral script to be truly effective, you have to instruct the subject to imagine himself in the ideal situation. It won't work if he imagines someone else getting all the benefits of your offer. He has to experience the benefits in his own imagination. That way, in your next meeting, you can ask him for compliance again, and you'll be surprised at his answer if he's been immersing himself in there, in what you've given him, in that behavioral script. Now, let's say you overcome the objection. You get the sale. But then your subject starts experiencing buyer's remorse, which means that they look back and they regret their decision to comply. That can really ruin repeat business because it will dissuade people from dealing with you again. So before that even happens, you have to make sure that the subject has been inoculated against buyer's remorse even before he leaves your site. So imagine you were talking right now to a person and they're suffering from buyer's remorse. They just bought something from you because your offer looked so tempting at the time, but now they're telling you that he's not going to be ordering again because of reason A, reason B, etc. What you can do to end this irrational remorse is inoculate the person by supporting his decision outright and by helping him prepare for the remorse that's going to come. You can say something to him like, "We both know that you invested a lot into this service because you want your home and business establishment to be secure 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's for your own peace of mind. What will you tell people if they ask you about your decision to invest a sizable amount for your peace of mind and protection?" After dropping that vital question, let him think of ways as to how he can justify his decision to take your offer. When you do this, the subject isn't going to feel hopeless and helpless when he pangs at a buyer's remorse later on. Even if no one really asks the subject why he invested resources into your offer, the justification that he's crafted in his own mind is going to be enough to halt the buyer's remorse, because in the end, other people's words really won't matter. What does matter is what the subject thinks and feels. If he's defeated by buyer's remorse, you can forget about repeat business. But if he's successful in battling it, your influence stays with that person for good. So, What I want to do is I want to finish up here with a simple blueprint for handling objections. There's no single method of dispelling objections and influencing other people, which is evidenced by the fact that there are so many different ways to do it. It really all depends on the situation. There's no single route to success, okay? But what I can tell you is that if you're well prepared and you follow and you listen to everything that I taught you, the ability to overcome the specific objections will come very easily to you. Now, many people have asked me in the past, is there a blueprint for handling objections? I can't really pack all of the things that you need to know in a short list because, like I said, it really all depends on the social situation, the interaction, and your specific subject. But what I can give you is a blueprint to follow. Number one, attitude adjustment is just as important as behavioral modification when you want to persuade someone to go with you at the moment. If the other person seems doubtful to what you're offering, it's best to keep his attitude positive at all times. Draw out the objections and answer all of his questions as satisfactorily as possible, okay? People want to work with allies. So if you appear to be an adversarial character, the subject's going to have more reasons to object to what you're bringing to the table. Objections are not meant to be blocked or cast aside. When someone's objecting, he's most likely looking for an answer or looking for your help. Be gracious when the objections come and be sincere when overcoming them. If the subject isn't responding to most of your techniques, ask him a question and give him options, your offer being the best option. This shows other people that you genuinely care about their interest. Never, ever forget to explore both sides of the coin. You'll be seen as more credible if you explore the pros and cons of your offer. Never show that you're affected by the person's objections. Instead, view them as simply parts of the conversation that have to be handled carefully so you can sustain the conversation. And lastly, before entering into a dialogue that requires influence or persuasion, make sure that you have brought along your long list of benefits and advantages. Know what separates your product, service, opinion, or idea from everyone else's, and how it's going to not only provide a benefit, but how it's going to reduce the pain that someone else might experience if they don't take you up on it. I really hope you enjoyed our conversation tonight on stealth, overcoming objections, and stealth objection handling. And I look forward to speaking with you again. This is Paul Macedo wishing you a great night.